Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Listeners, today is a bit of a different episode. We have a guest on the show who is actually also a fan of the show. His name is Shane Ray Martin. He's a wonderful guy, and he pitched me a while back to say, hey, I want to come on your show, talk about negotiation, and talk about how I've used it in my life through Suicide Hotline, volunteering, as well as in my sales job. And I loved the idea. So we got him on the show talking all about the skills and the knowledge that he has learned during his tenure as a Suicide Hotline volunteer, as well as a salesperson, and how he's applied those things in his day-to-day life. Super interesting conversation. I think you'll love it. Highly encourage you to reach out to him. Enjoy. Shane, how are you, man?
Hey, Mark, doing amazing. Really looking forward to having a conversation with you today. And want to thank you so much for Negotiation Ninjas. Made an impact on my life, and I imagine everyone else listening too.
Well, thank you very much, man. It's a labor of love. I love doing this, and I love speaking to cool people like you and people that are actually using the skills and trying to improve themselves. And when we had our previous conversation, I think that's what struck me most, is that you're a professional in the sales game. You're trying to improve yourself on a daily basis, and you listen to a number of podcasts where you try and basically acquire new information that you can apply to your life. And that's what I'm so excited about this show, because I think a lot of people may listen to something once or twice, but the regular listeners are the ones that are actually listening and applying a lot of the things. So I certainly appreciate not only that you're a listener, but that you're actually applying the information. I think that's amazing, man. It's rare to actually have someone implement the knowledge, implement the information. You know, there's that saying that knowledge is power, which I think is true to a certain extent, but I think the implementation or the application of that knowledge, that's where the real power comes in.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. We listen to podcasts, we listen to audiobooks, we read books, but actually applying it in my volunteer work on the Suicide Hotline and also in sales here in Silicon Valley has just been, that's the fun. That's the good stuff. Saving people's lives, getting them to put the gun down, getting them to step off the ledge, and also even closing deals faster in sales. It all comes full circle, and it starts by just taking in good information from you and everyone else speaking about negotiation.
Awesome. Let's talk about that Suicide Hotline gig. I know that you chose to do that as a volunteer opportunity. Why Suicide Hotline?
The Suicide Hotline, it really started from the book Never Split the Difference with Chris Voss. And I know he's been on your show, and that's where I read about it. And it goes down to what you said a moment ago, applying the knowledge. I had the information, right? We all have the information, but actually applying the things like tactical empathy and applying things like paraphrasing and labeling emotions and gathering information with asking good questions and focusing really on the problem of why you're communicating with the person is where I applied that knowledge. And the Suicide Hotline, it's a playground for all of that. And to grow yourself, but more importantly, to make an impact on someone else's life by just giving them an ear for them to share with, that's a win-win. It's amazing. And yeah, it's been an absolute journey. You know, I'm no perfectionist. I'm not perfect by any means, just because not every call is going to go the way that you want it to go. Similarly in sales, not every call is going to have the outcome that you want. And similarly on the hotline, it's like having the beginning with the end in mind. So you don't have to solve anyone's problem. You just have to be there for them and give them an ear to listen to. And I'd love to share the tactics and the trainings that they've taught me that are absolutely applicable to sales and closing deals faster and getting bigger deals. And that's the real connection. That's the gap per se that I'm bridging by using the Suicide Hotline as my playground.
Totally. And volunteering on a Suicide Hotline is, I mean, that's heavy stuff. You're dealing with people that may be close to taking their own lives. How do you deal with that on an ongoing basis? Because it might be quite of an emotional roller coaster for a lot of people.
It absolutely is an emotional roller coaster because there is a suicide every 17 seconds.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it is a roller coaster. So having that expectation that, hey, this isn't going to be easy, right? This is going to be tough stuff. But aligning the right people in your life to speak and just get off your chest the tough things, taking care of yourself, going for a jog, staying fit, reading, doing whatever like fills your heart, going to church, whatever it is, those things help you enable to help more people. And thankfully, I've really been intentional, and my coach at the Suicide Hotline has been intentional about taking care of yourself. And similarly for everyone in procurement and sales who's listening, we got to take care of ourselves first, because when the mask dropped down from an airplane, the oxygen mask, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You've got to put the mask on yourself first before you can help other people. And that's the way that I think about it, is in order to help more people and have a bigger impact, because that's why I do it. And that's why, imagine you do Negotiation Ninjas, is to help yourself first. That way you can help others. So that's how I take care of myself.
Incredible. And so dealing with those issues in the Suicide Hotline, when you're having a call and someone's sort of unloading on you, sort of how they're feeling, are you trying to get to the root cause? How do you ask open-ended questions to understand where they're really coming from?
So that's a great question. The first part is, yes, we do try to find the root cause. We really want to focus on one problem. Similarly, in sales, you want to find the real issue of why they're communicating with you.
Yeah.
And the way that you get there is exactly what you had mentioned. It's gathering information. It's reflecting on their feelings. It's paraphrasing what they're saying. And it's just reflecting to the content in which they're saying. So for example, you're feeling sad because your wife just left you, or you're right. Feeling, it's letting them sit there with the emotion, and it's bringing their emotion to life. It's giving it words, labeling it. And then of course you focus on the problem by asking, you know, what was on your mind before you called in tonight? Or what have you been thinking about most lately? Or even a question like, what would you like to change the most? Nice. Could all be things that help question. You. Yeah, those could all be things that could help you focus on one problem. That way you can see whether or not your product is the solution. And if it's not the solution, I think acting with integrity and telling people, hey, this isn't going to work out, but I'm happy to share with you a few recommendations for other companies. And I've done that before in sales. I've introduced prospects who weren't a fit for my company to our competitors. And our competitors are like, what's going on? Like, why is this person doing it? But it's because I know that in order to get more, you have to give more. And that is similarly in the Suicide Hotline. It's similar in the sales arena too.
Yep. There's a few things I picked up there that I think are really important. First one is, in order to get more, you have to give more. I think one of the principles I live by is you reap what you sow. So when that happens, and a lot of people don't get, especially people that are particularly negotiation professionals, sometimes it's difficult for us to think that way because we're thinking, well, we don't want to make concessions, or we don't want to make, you know, those referrals to competitors. And so what we try and do is we might try and force a fit instead of realizing that, look, the fit just doesn't exist. There is no fit. So instead of me trying to force the fit and make this customer a customer and make them angry or unhappy, I should be referring them to someone else. And this is where I think a lot of people get tripped up. It doesn't have to be a monetary give, right? It doesn't have to be a monetary concession. It doesn't have to be a terms concession. It could just be a relatable concession, and that you're giving them information about yourself so that you can create more of an interpersonal connection, more of that interpersonal relationship. What do you think about that?
I think to create that interpersonal connection is, it's fun because it sort of lets people's guards go down when you find an uncommon commonality. Like maybe you have a favorite sports team or something like that. Especially the thing that I've learned that really puts people's guards down and allows them to share what they really need and what their real problem is to just teach. It's to teach, it's to give information, share blog posts, share the webinar that's coming up at your company, invite them to maybe an event that your company's having. Because when we teach, the guards go down, but when we sell, guards go up, because there's so much information already out there in the world. You can Google anything right now and find the information. So I really firmly believe that giving magnetizes you.
Yes. One of the things that, for the listeners, just so that you're aware, the podcast isn't the only thing that I do. Obviously, I also do negotiation training. And whenever we're selling our services as negotiation trainers, one of the most impactful things that we do is we focus on value first. So the first conversation that we have with anyone is always about, hey, we'd love to do training with you, but even if we can't do work together in the short term, here's a few resources for you so that you can basically upskill your own team without us. And so we're trying to give people the skills without actually using us. And what that actually does is it increases the trust level that people have in us. And so the next time that we approach them, our sales cycle is fairly long. The next time that we approach them, it's a very easy conversation because we've started with that value. So we've started with giving them the opportunity to get better themselves. And then they all of a sudden realize, holy cow, we actually need to improve on this. And so that next conversation is super easy. And so I think a lot of the ways that we can really get better on both sides of the table, whether it's on the procurement side or the sales side, or even, you know, the suicide hotline or crisis negotiator side, is giving that information first, giving that value first, giving that insight first, because a lot of that, I think, really builds that trust level.
It does build the trust level. And a really great example of that is sales is dead. It's all about being a trusted advisor.
Yes.
And a director here at my company named Nathan Parrott always talks about how we need to give value first, but you also have to know what you want in return.
Yes.
You have to know what you're hoping to get, because we can give value all day. We can give. But if we don't know what we want, then how do we move the needle? How do we get deals done quicker? How do we move people through the funnel quicker? And the way that you do that is by having a clear plan, beginning with the end in mind, knowing what you need to close the deal, but then always acting like a trusted advisor versus acting like a salesperson.
Yes. And that just means being there for them, essentially, right? Being there to understand their needs, being there to understand their wants, and having the information that they need related to their needs. And we spoke about this just before this interview of, are we trying to sell them something that we want to sell them, or are we trying to provide them something that's a solution for their problem?
Right. Absolutely. And we want to give them solutions to problems they actually have. We don't want to create problems for them, because that's just selling something that they don't actually need. And that's actually step six. So there's seven steps when you're rolling through a suicide hotline call. And step six is providing referrals or giving some sort of information or giving tip. For example, are you seeing a therapist, or do you need financial assistance? How about this one? Like, have you spoken to a lawyer? There's lots of people going through issues like that. So providing referrals, because you know what their problem is, because you've done the gathering of information, you've reflected on how they're feeling, you've reacted to it, you focus on that one problem, and then you can provide referrals based on their answer to your how and what question.
Love that. So that's the sixth step. What are all the steps?
Sure. Yeah. So first one right away is build rapport. You got to say, hey, my name is Shane. What's your name? So you're already giving something. You're giving something tangible.
Yes.
And then the second step is assessing for suicide. Just straight up asking, are you feeling suicidal today? Of course, not in that tone. It's more of matching their tone, because when they say their name, you're going to know how they communicate, and we match that. So if they're soft-spoken, I'm going to go soft-spoken.
Whereas so you're Chris mirroring Foss, right away.
Absolutely. You turn on that late night FM DJ voice, you know, that smooth jazz voice. Come on.
Love it.
You know, that's what Chris Foss preaches, right? And it's so powerful, because over the phone, that's how we can communicate, which is a challenge. So first step, build rapport. Second step, assess for suicide, of course. And the third step is to go straight into gathering information. For example, how are you feeling? And that's going to, some people, that's going to release the floodgates. They'll tell you the whole life story, and you'll be sitting there for 10 minutes. You're like, all right, then, well, this person's got quite the story. Or maybe they'll just share a little bit about what's going on. So that's the third step, gathering information. While you do that, you paraphrase and reflect on how they're feeling. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense.
Awesome. And so once you've gathered the information that you need, then boom. That's when you focus on the one problem that we're talking about. Similarly, in sales, you're focused on that one issue that's actually hurting the person, or maybe not hurting, but the void that needs to be filled, that gap that needs a bridge to be built over. So you focus on that one problem by asking the how and what question again, really focusing. And then the next thing is assessing their own resources. So step four is focus on one problem. Step five is assessing, do they like already have the resources at their disposal? For example, you can just ask them like, hey, have you eaten today? Even something like, have you been sleeping well? So we're assessing their own resources before they reach out for other resources, because that's the next step, is providing referrals for other resources. What we talked about, like, are you seeing a therapist or a lawyer? Like we had talked about, that's step six, providing referrals that aren't their own. And then concluding the call. This is my favorite. There's an art to concluding a call. You can do this in sales. You can do this with your mother, with your father, whoever you're trying to communicate. You can do this with a friend. The single most quickest way to get someone off the phone in a loving, caring way is to simply just ask, what are you going to do after this call? Because their mind is already forward thinking, and then it just naturally closes out. So something like, hey, I'm so glad you called in today. What else do you have going on tonight? And then boom, they go right into that. And they're like, all right, well, thanks so much for calling. Please call us back in 4 hours or in tomorrow, something like that.
Yeah, love that. Something that you mentioned when you're identifying that single thing that you want to focus on, Freud had a principle about pain and pleasure, right? So his idea was that people have a tendency to either seek pleasure or avoid pain. And so what you're trying to do in that circumstance, I would assume, is find out the thing that's causing them the most pain so that you can try and deal with that on that call. Is that right?
That's definitely right. Because when you know that pain, you know, this makes me think of Scott Tillema. You've had him on your show, and he talks about in his TED talk how he was in a situation that was like sort of could be out of control, and he was the crisis negotiator. And he talks about just finding that one thing that was really bugging the person who was holding someone hostage in crisis. And he found that one issue as he was negotiating with his squad outside the house. And when he found that issue, he was able to provide the solution. It's just like what we had just run through, all the seven steps.
The funny thing is, I find when we try and relate this to the business world, all of this stuff is directly applicable, especially when it comes to identifying that one thing when we're trying to create a solution. For the listeners who are listening right now on the sales side and the procurement side, in the business world, we all have pain. There's something that we're trying to do to ease pain, or there's an opportunity that we know we have where we're trying to seek pleasure. And so if you can think of it in that circumstance, and that's helped me a great deal whenever I'm doing my own negotiations for my business, is what pain am I trying to solve, or what opportunity, what pleasure am I trying to give to the person that's doing business with me? The strange thing, however, is based on behavioral economics research, we know that people are more likely to try and solve something that's painful or try and solve something that's they're more fearful of than to try and partake in something that they're getting something out of, like an opportunity. So you could almost think of it any opportunity in a loss scenario. So you could structure your sentence like an opportunity and say, hey, there's a huge opportunity to do this. And if you do it, you could make this amount of money. Or you could structure that sentence in a pain structure and say, if you don't do this, you're probably going to lose out on this amount of money. And so people are more likely to jump on a fear-based or a pain-based structured sentence than they are an opportunity-based structured sentence. So if you're going into your sale and you're thinking, okay, what are people going to respond most to? It's important for you to think about how people respond to pain versus pleasure. They're more apt to try and solve something that's painful than to take something of an opportunity to give themselves pleasure.
Absolutely. And a way to make that easier for you is to know the pain.
Yes.
Because then you can...
Exactly. Totally agree with you. One of the things that I thought was interesting about your stuff, because you do so much work in the suicide hotline and also in the sales stuff, you also come across maybe some pitfalls where you see other salespeople around you making negotiation mistakes. And because you work in negotiation in the suicide hotline of things, you probably pick up on those mistakes right away. What do you think the major mistakes are that salespeople make when they get into negotiation situations?
The biggest mistake I've seen and even made myself is thinking it's about me, thinking it's about my paycheck, thinking it's about my ego. And that's why when I walk into the suicide hotline call center, I do my absolute best to check that and leave it outside. You've got to leave the ego outside. That way you can go be life. That way you can go be hope for someone who needs it most. And a great reminder is on my door of my apartment, there's a note that says, bring hope. And it's really simple. And my roommate put it up there, Tyler, and it's just two words, but it reminds me that it's not about me. It's not about my sale. It's about everything that you just talked about, Mark. It's about knowing the pains and then providing the solution. It's directly compatible with business as it is with closing deals faster in sales, as it is with being really effective on the suicide hotline.
Amazing. When you're talking about bringing hope to someone and you're talking about solving those problems, that seems like a very altruistic way of looking at sales. And for a lot of people listening to this, they're like, that sounds super cheesy, right? Like bringing hope to someone.
It is cheesy, yeah.
So when we're looking at that, how do you reconcile that with maybe other salespeople around you that are thinking more of like the close, close, close as fast as we can methodology?
That's a tough question. Hold on, Marsh. Let me think, because yeah, your question about hope and being cheesy is so understandable and it makes sense. And I'm actually happy that you brought that up, because sales is about moving the needle. It's about building businesses. It's about getting things done. And I really believe, although hope may sound cheesy, it is the thing that drives business. It is the thing that keeps people moving. And whether or not you feel like hope is a part of business or it's not, then that's up for you to decide, definitely. But I do know that acting with integrity and valuing your customer over yourself and offering options for your customer and painting a picture of the promised land or what could be for your customer once they have your solution. And when you invite them along for that journey by saying, you know, if I could show you XYZ, then that is hope. It is hope. It is dollars in your bank account. It is moving the needle for your company. It is creating more jobs. It is giving you a future for your family. And that's just thinking from a higher level. It's thinking bigger than just each conversation that you're in. So bringing hope, although it's cheesy, it's a part of what we do, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, I love that. Have you read the book Give and Take by Adam Grant?
I haven't read the Give and Take, but I have read the Go Giver.
Yeah. So sort of similar. Basically, the conclusion that Adam comes to is that people who give more end up receiving more in the long term. Mm. And it's all science-based, all evidence-based. So for those people that are listening thinking, well, that's nonsense, he actually backs it up with some fairly solid research. But the thing that I love about what you've said about giving hope, it really relates to my earlier comment about it doesn't have to be about something that's monetary. It doesn't have to be something that's about terms or the immediate deal. Just giving them the opportunity to know that there is a solution to their problem. I think that in and of itself is giving. And especially when you come to like the suicide hotline example, to say, hi, my name's Shane, you are giving something right away. So you're giving information. And if you read work, for the listeners, I highly recommend this. If you read work by Cialdini on influence, he talks about the power of reciprocity and how reciprocity builds influence. And I think one of the things that is super powerful about any kind of negotiation is how you can structure, and you can do this before even, in fact, I recommend that you do this before even going into the negotiation, determining what it is you're willing to give away. So go in expecting to give up something, right? You're going to make concessions, but plan for those concessions ahead of time and understand their value, their objective value before you go into the negotiation. And it could be anything, right? It could be information. It could be about financial. It could be terms-based. It could be hope-based. It could be information about the marketplace. It really could be anything. But every piece of information that you give away is a concession. And when you start thinking about the objective value of those concessions and asking for other things in return, by the way, concessions should never be one way. When you ask for other things in return, what you'll find is that you'll start to evaluate the things that you get back in the same way. So when you get something back that doesn't necessarily equal the objective value of the thing that you give away, you know that you should be asking for more. And so when you start thinking this way and you start thinking about, okay, I know that I'm going to have to make concessions. I know that I'm going to have to give in order to get, then you can start thinking about, okay, well, what am I now getting? Which goes back to your earlier comment of like, okay, what's our goal? Because we're trying to move the needle. We're trying to get a sale, obviously. We're trying to close a deal. What am I actually getting back from the other person? But you've got to think objectively about the value of the information that you're giving away, but think objectively about the value of the information that you're giving away from their perspective. Because while you may not think that payment terms are valuable, for example, the other party may think that payment terms are super valuable. And the only way that you can assess their value based on their perception is to ask open-ended questions about, like, maybe cash flow, for example, like how important is cash flow to your business? And then you can determine, okay, well, cash flow is super important. Therefore, I know that payment terms are important. And so if I make a concession on payment terms, I can value it at X dollars, for example. And then when you ask for something in return, you're asking for that thing.
Mark, I'm jumping up and down right now because you're full of wisdom. Seriously.
I appreciate that, man.
Honestly, because I share the same feelings about thinking objectively about it, because influence is something I'm sort of obsessed with or just really interested in, because there are principles that all align with influencing others in a positive direction. And that's what Cialdini, who I'm a huge fan of and also is from Arizona and teaches psychology at Arizona State, where I went to school. And his two books, Influence and then also Persuasion, are both on my bookshelf at home, because the CEO of my company now, Jeff Fiduna, mentioned to read Influence, which is a fairly old book, but still like one of the most read books on persuasion. And I'd love to just quickly share those principles, because there's a video on YouTube about the six principles that influence others. And it's 11 minutes and 34 seconds of absolute pure negotiation gold. It's
share
so
those
good.
Six principles, and let's include the link to that video in the show notes.
Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely. Let's see if I can remember them off the top of my head here. So you already mentioned reciprocity.
Yeah,
reciprocity,
I think that's principle number one.
Yep, reciprocity. The second thing is authority, or being the person who has the answers, being the person who's the leader. Maybe a good example is like a pilot. Like, we trust them. They influence us. We'll listen to them when they talk about planes, because they're wearing a pilot's outfit. Like, we trust them.
Yep.
The other thing is absolutely similarity. We find comfort and we're influenced by others who are similar to us. Something funny here in San Francisco, everyone has dogs. Everyone has dogs here, it seems like. And I've noticed when I go for jogs or walk around, people's dogs kind of like, they look similar to their dogs. We're attracted and influenced. That's very weird. Is that too weird? Like, does that make sense? People buy dogs that kind of look like them.
I totally think that most dog owners look like their dogs.
I don't know. I had that thought the other day and it's so true. But yeah, we're attracted and influenced by things that are like us. So let's see, scarcity. A great example in a YouTube video, it talks about, do you remember those really fast airplanes, the super airplanes that were flying from London, New York in like 3 hours or something like that?
Yeah.
When they announced that those airplanes were being taken away because they're too dangerous, the ticket sales skyrocketed. So scarcity, it influences us to buy more tickets or to purchase the product. And the last two, consistency. So being like consistent, especially in sales, this is important. Having thoughtful follow-up, being consistent with doing what you say you're going to do. For example, get coffee all the time with amazing salespeople here in San Francisco and Silicon Valley. And one of the common themes coming up is just simply do what you say you're going to do. And that's really powerful. That's consistency. And then the last one is consensus. So where the most powerful form of influence is a referral. So if someone, if a bunch of other people, absolutely, consensus, social proof. So those are the influence mechanisms that Cialdini talks about. And I really hope to meet him one day, because he's just an incredible guy. So reciprocity, scarcity, consistency, consensus, authority, and similarity. There we go.
Wow. Nailed it.
Let's go. I love it. I love it.
I think one of the things that I found super powerful in any kind of negotiation is the whole, and Cialdini's concept on this is the whole concept of social proof, that referral thing you were talking about, right? Because when other people find out that people that they respect are doing that thing, then it becomes a lot easier for them to make a decision about doing that thing as well. So if you're listening to this show right now, if you're, regardless of what side of the table you're sitting on, having that, the referral based or the social proof based thing to say, hey, other people are doing this too, is a really, really easy, quick way to build influence in your negotiation.
It really is. And it just starts with a few words. Other companies in your position are doing XYZ. Is this something that aligns with your initiatives this year? That's something actionable that you can say. And I'm all about taking this information and putting it into play. So I hope that people give that a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, totally. That's super awesome. When I was thinking about our conversation coming up today and I was preparing for it, I was thinking about things that salespeople do better than others when it comes to negotiation. What do you think that everyone could learn from salespeople when it comes to negotiation?
Definitely the principles of influence. A thing that people could learn from salespeople applies like directly in life. It's having a plan, having a goal in mind. A lot of salespeople are very goal-oriented.
Yes.
And have a destination. It's like going on a road trip. You always have a destination in mind. Maybe it's Disneyland, maybe it's Hawaii. You've got a destination in mind. And when you have somewhere where you want to go, everything else that we've talked about today, you can align to get to where you want to go. And there's a million ways to do that. There's a million books on sales. And it can sometimes feel overwhelming listening to all the podcasts out there, all the books out there. And so my thought is, and I hope that this inspires someone, to take all this information But you know what? Make it your own. Be who you are. And I have a really great friend who reminds me, he says, you know, you're doing great. You're having impact, but be better. Keep striving. And I think that's what salespeople do really well that could help other people as well.
What you're saying, we shouldn't just wing it?
I mean, hey, you can wing it. That's like showing up to school at elementary school, you know, for the science fair without doing any work the night before. Just wing it.
The unfortunate thing about negotiation is that I think a lot of people view negotiation as winging it, right? I mean, you'll see shows on TV or movies where people just basically shoot from the hip in a negotiation. And the truth is that real negotiation is so far from that. It's not about winging it. It's not about going in and having no idea where you're going to end up. I mean, to your point, you have a destination, you have a goal, you've planned for it ahead of time, you've prepared for it ahead of time, you've got a strategy on how you're going to get there, you've got your list of questions that you're potentially going to ask. I mean, obviously, you still have to stay nimble and think on your feet, but that doesn't mean that you're not going in prepared. So I think for the listeners who are listening this today, one of the big pieces of wisdom that Shane's pointed out here, and I think we can all learn from this, is have a goal, have a destination in mind before you start any negotiation. Not only that, plan for it ahead of time. Make sure you've got your strategy in place before you go into your negotiation so that you can shape the discussion the way that you need to shape the discussion so that you're not held hostage to the agenda of the other person. So even if they do have an agenda, you've still got your strategy in mind so that you can shape that discussion as much as you can. Shane, I've really enjoyed this discussion. I think it was really, really good. And I think the fact that you're directly applying the information and using it to not only do better in your career, but also to do better by other people by volunteering on the suicide hotline is a big deal, man. So first of all, I want to thank you for the volunteer work that you do, because mental health issues are huge, and having people to speak to for a lot of people who are considering suicide is a big deal. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show and for doing what you're doing for the negotiation, procurement, and sales community. It's absolutely having an impact. And I just want to say thank you to everyone for listening and for trying out these tactics, like we talked about, asking these questions. And I would love to hear how all these things go for you in your life. And I'm just really inspired by the show, inspired by everyone who wants to grow and become better at what they do, because ultimately, of course, it's about bringing hope, but it's also about getting results. And I hope that these things will enable people to do just that.
Totally. I'm sure people are going to want to follow you online. How do they do that?
Yeah, great way to follow me online is certainly through LinkedIn and also through my website. It's shaneraymartin.com. And I'd love to connect with people, maybe even grab coffee. I've grabbed coffee with listeners of other shows I've been on and just built amazing relationships in the procurement community, and want to just keep connecting and keep growing and keep inspiring and bringing hope to people.
Love that. For the listeners, just so that you know, I will link out to Shane's social profiles as well as his website. We're also going to link out to a pretty cool document that he sent me on the 46 ways to speed up a sales process. So I think that's pretty cool. You're going to get that as a freebie from him. Plus, we're going to link out to an amazing TED talk that Shane mentioned on Cialdini's 6 steps of influence. So I think you should look at that, but also read both of his books, which are incredible, by the way. Influence is the one that we're talking about today, but he's also got another one called Persuasion, which is equally as good in my mind. So check that out. Shane, again, thank you very, very much for being on today, man. Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark. And thanks for everyone who listened today.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get, because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.